Hello once again, your wonky and affable host Ryan Luis Rodriguez here for the Bonus Chronicles. Little morsels of informative nonsense exclusively for you lovely subscribers here on Patreon. Today we're concluding our massive two-part deep dive into some of the most controversial movies of the past decade, the Disney revival of Star Wars. If these episodes were a trilogy, they would be wildly misshapen because there's only two of them. We can't call this the dark middle chapter because two has no middle, so let's call it the incredulous last chapter. May either the Force or the midichlorians still be with us all. Let's get back into it, shall we? Left off with the conclusion to Rogue One, which left your wonky and affable host sobbing in a public place like only a destroyed man who just lost one of his greatest heroes can. The year after Rogue One, Christmas 2017, saw the release of the 8th episode of Star Wars, Rian Johnson's The Last Jedi. And before we get to the movie itself, I wanted to share my reaction to hearing that Johnson was going to direct a sequel to a movie I hadn't even seen yet. To be fair, he was hired in 2014, so nobody had seen The Force Awakens yet, not even the people who made it, because it was still being shot. Quote, "The guy who made Looper, my favorite episodes of Breaking Bad, and Brick, is gonna make a Star Wars movie. Awesome! As you may know by now, I like to support my fellow Ryans. There's not a lot of us, so we gotta stick together, even if we spell it wrong. Ryan Coogler, Ryan Ridley, Ryan North, Meg Ryan... We're good people, us Ryans. Except for Ryan Murphy, Jack Ryan, and Ryan Reynolds. They don't get to be part of our club. Anyway, Rian Johnson made a Star Wars movie. And it's... fucking great.
Ray! Ben!
You must have 1,000 questions.
Where's Ray?
Something inside me is awake. And I need help.
We are the spark that'll light the fire. We'll burn the First Order down. I was raised to fight. For the first time, I had something to fight for.
Rated PG-13.
Let's look at the circumstances that he was handed. Circumstances he dealt with like a fucking champ. Hired to write a sequel to a movie that is not only still in production, but being regularly rewritten as well. Has to make the middle chapter of a trilogy, which, aside for the third act of a franchise ender, is the hardest goddamn thing to write. This middle chapter of the trilogy will be instantly unfavorably compared to The Empire Strikes Back, the middle chapter that defined the perfect middle chapter. He's crafting the further stories of characters that have not yet been introduced to filmgoers. Let me elaborate on this one a bit. There are only 5 characters with dialogue from the original trilogy that return for The Force Awakens. Technically 3, since one of them is a Wookiee, and Luke has a silent cameo, which means that he doesn't know how 88% of these characters will be received. What if one of them is despised, and he gives them a prominent part in the story? Not only are you crafting the future, you're dealing with the fallout of an ending. And remember, the end of the middle chapter has to provide at least a vague roadmap for a satisfactory conclusion for characters that he did not create, and some characters that were part of his childhood. He's directing a movie that costs at least 10 times more than his previously highest budget of $30 million. He's dealing with Star Wars fans. Actually, that one seems to be more of an abstract and even benign circumstance in 2014, although it will soon change. Are you cowering in fear yet? 'Cause I am. The greatest compliment that I can pay to The Last Jedi is this. From frame one until the end credits roll, one thing is crystal clear, communicated quite well. Rian Johnson loves Star Wars. All of it. He loves the original trilogy, he somehow loves the prequels, he loves the expanded universe, he loves the theme park attractions, he loves the merchandise, he loves the parodies, especially Hardware Wars, he loves the discourse, he loves the fandom, he gets why people like Star Wars. J.J. Abrams gets what people expect from Star Wars, to a fault, but Rian Johnson gets what makes it good. To be fair, JJ had a tall order, completely beholden to the past. He did some heavy lifting, some of it lazily, but Johnson had the benefit, however uncertain, of entering a re-established world, able to push forward to a more liberated future. There are moments and ideas and frames here that harken back to every possible era. He'll take a slice of Revenge of the Sith for a shot composition, he'll take an aspect from the toy line for a character, he'll quote the rhythms, the music, and the design of a sequence from Star Tours, the OG Star Tours, one of the most perfect things that the Walt Disney Corporation ever assisted in, for an action scene. And although it can easily transform into fan service, the bad kind, he uses the old as a springboard. It's familiar, but definitely not a one-to-one correlation. The Last Jedi is sprawling and messy, at times unwieldily so. But when it concludes, if The Force Awakens was a snack, unnourishing but tasty, this is a meal. Your appetite is sated, if not a little overstuffed, so there's no need for a dessert, because this is a meal where the dessert is actually the final course. It's clearly made with a purpose outside of building a franchise, taking characters where he thinks they need to go, right or wrong, and instilled with a legitimate sense of adventure. He didn't make the best movie. Empire still reigns supreme, the original Star Wars still has it beat, but he may be the best director to work in the series. When you think he's going to zig, he zags. This franchise is not what I would traditionally call irreverent. It's too sincere to ever earn that distinction, but this movie is. And God bless Rian Johnson for that. He saw an opening, and he went for it. He understood the series' origins as a riff on Akira Kurosawa's The Hidden Fortress and said, "I'll do you one better. We're gonna go Rashomon," introducing the concept of flashbacks with shifting, dueling perspectives, deepening and broadening this franchise tapestry. He looks at the path not taken and says, "If David Lynch directed Return to the Jedi, we would have gotten some weird shit in 1983. So how about I show you where green milk comes from?" The trippy character designs in the Canto Bight casino sequence feel reminiscent of Luc Besson, who has spent decades making European-flavored sci-fi movies that are basically George Lucas on ecstasy. The C-plot of the Resistance cruisers just out of reach of a first-order dreadnought, unable to jump to hyperspace? That's practically the first episode from the 2004 Battlestar Galactica, which was a political, relevant take on space opera. I fucking love all of this. But I knew I would love this movie very early on, when I agreed with the villain. Star Wars villains are many things, but they're never right. Even when Palpatine sounds somewhat reasonable in the prequels, he's still gaslighting and operating from a devious plan that relies on so much random circumstance and his opponents making decision upon decision. The villains are fun, iconic even, but there's no mistaking the fact that they are wrong and evil. But let's take Kylo Ren, who is still operating on his key arc from The Force Awakens, wanting to be bad, but always being pulled to the light, swatting it away in the end, best exemplified when he puts a lightsaber through his father Han Solo's gut. He's still an open wound, and hesitates blowing up a Resistance cruiser because he senses his mother, Leia, on board. As if even he knows that he just killed his dad, so doing mom in would be too much. It gets destroyed anyway, and Leia is sucked into the void of space, using the Force to pull herself to safety, which he doesn't witness. Shortly thereafter, he destroys the helmet that he seemingly only created to feel closer to his grandfather, his role model, the murderous Darth Vader. In doing so, he kicks the next part of his arc into gear, and although he doesn't say it out loud until later, that arc is...
"Let the past die. Kill it, if you have to."
That is this movie's first thesis, albeit phrased in the terminology of a villain. Rian Johnson is telling people not to be too precious about the past and to embrace the new, to appreciate what came before and transcend to the next plane. Now, Kylo Ren is talking about the Jedi, specifically the only survivor of the Order, his uncle Luke Skywalker. But throughout, he shows that he is willing to include his boss, Supreme Leader Snoke, and whatever mysterious origins define Rey, with whom he has a connection he cannot explain. And he's right, because the Jedi suck. If you take the prequels at face value, they are about a society that is done in by their own stubborn ignorance, only to be lionized as the noble dead despite being murdered because they were unwilling to acknowledge an evil staring them right in the face. They are an antiquated concept, and Palpatine deserves credit for exploiting that, even if he does so for the wrong reasons. The Jedi refuse to learn from their mistakes and keep repeating the same history. Johnson is willing to look at the questions of The Force Awakens and say, the only interesting way forward is to give answers no one will expect. When it comes to Snoke's actual identity, he pulls a big fat who cares and slices him in half before his second scene is over, taking the entire audience by surprise. Isn't that what you want? To watch a movie and be unable to guess where it's going? Isn't that what all directors with something to say strive for? Isn't that what they should strive for? Bonus points for using this surprise to launch the single most brutal fight in the entire series, putting our protagonist back against the wall and forcing her to slaughter her way out of it, tapping into her capacity for darkness, wordlessly revealing how much like the villain she can be. Were you expecting Luke to train Rey like Yoda trained him? Well, what if Luke is a dejected burnout who gave up on his calling and wants nothing to do with her, whoever the hell she is?
What did you think was going to happen here?
Probably something different, which is why I appreciate where it went. When it comes to Rey's parentage, the internet theories amongst fans were endless. Is she a Skywalker? Related to Obi-Wan? Related to some Jedi we've never heard of? The answer, at least in this movie, is no. She's just a person. Her parents were nobodies. They gave up on her because they didn't care about her. I like that answer. Love it, in fact, because you were being led to believe that any of these were valid, despite it actually being the easy way out, and because it supports the first thesis and ties into the secondary thesis. Anyone can use the Force. We are not made special because of who our parents are. We are made special because of what we choose to do with the life we are given. And anyone has the potential to be someone special.
This is not going to go the way you think.
It is.
As we addressed last week, the introduction of midichlorians suggests that you must be tied to someone with the Force to be Force-sensitive. Without directly refuting this concept, Rian Johnson calls bullshit, and in doing so, makes the phrase, may the Force be with you, mean something again. If midichlorians are a valid explanation, then everyone who utters this maxim in the original trilogy is wasting their breath. Fighter pilots, if they need an X-Wing to blow shit up, guess what? They don't have the Force with them. Politicians definitely don't have the Force with them. The Last Jedi says to midichlorians, okay, but... When the little slave kid at the end of the film uses the Force to grab a broom without comment, it's reclaiming the meaning of the original film in a canny, subversive way. It's fucking brilliant. He's not undoing anything. There is a difference between undoing and pushing forward, and he's allowing the viewer to come to the proper conclusions, which of course blew up in his face, and it's why I will defend him with my dying breath. The vocal contingent of Last Jedi detractors, the bedfellows of the contingent who protested more prominent roles for women and minorities, and the contingent who are out for Kathleen Kennedy's blood for reasons, operate on an entitled mindset. My Luke Skywalker would never give up on his friends. Your Luke Skywalker is a theoretical prospect because you didn't make the fucking movie. You can't speak for George Lucas either, who just recently revealed that not only was his arc similar to what he had planned for the sequel trilogy, but that he was also going to kill Luke at the end of 8. But how dare you do this? How dare you ruin the end of The Force Awakens? Do you know who put Luke on this island in isolation with a Grizzly Adams beard, living in a space convent? The guy who made the last movie. Rian Johnson's job was explaining how this ambiguous moment, which he didn't write, came to pass. If you want to be mad about people actually undoing canon, be mad about The Force Awakens deciding that not only did Han and Leia sire a bad seed, but the pressure caused them to break up, and they haven't seen each other in years. Are you mad that the original trinity of Han, Luke, and Leia never reunited? Well, guess who killed Han Solo in Episode 7? A decision that I approve of, by the way.
This is not going to go the way you think.
It is.
These fans are the kids that bought all the toys and constantly brought them to school, but before you were allowed to pick one up, you had to agree to play with them only the way they wanted you to.
I don't like the movie you made, so I'm gonna petition for someone to remake it.
And what if it doesn't hit every expectation they had? Another fucking petition? These people view Star Wars as a country club, and The Last Jedi is a public park. A beautiful public park. It made $712 million, more than any other movie that year, but $200 less than The Force Awakens, the only reasonable conclusion being that it wasn't the movie which brought Star Wars back to theaters after a decade, but those who hated it instead saw this as a validation of their most venomous impulses, a failure that they predicted and celebrated. Amazingly, The Last Jedi seems to be the only production of this new era to be made without incident, aside from maybe Mark Hamill telling the press that he didn't approve of Luke's storyline before the movie came out, which definitely emboldened some of its most noxious critics. The Force Awakens barely came together in the end. Rogue One was overhauled after shooting wrapped and had significant portions reshot with a different, uncredited director. And the next release, Solo: A Star Wars Story, fired their directors altogether.
Big shot gangster, putting together crew. You in?
I waited a long time for a shot like this.
What are you doing with Harry and the boy?
We need a ship.
The Millennium Falcon.
Every ship isn't for everyone. She needs a particular type of pilot.
You done flirting?
These people, not your friends.
There's a lesson to be learned here.
I got a really good feeling about this.
Depending on who you ask, Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, the geniuses behind The Lego Movie and 21 and 22 Jump Street, were angling for a more comedic, improvisatory take on Han Solo's origin story, which upset co-writer Lawrence Kasdan and led to their dismissal and replacement by Ron Howard, a filmmaker with a comparatively anonymous vision. I think this was probably a disastrous decision, and definitely resulted in my entering the theater with multiple chips on my shoulder. But it wasn't enough for me to start circulating a hashtag calling for Kathleen Kennedy's head. Or Kasdan's for that matter, even if it was his fault. The resulting movie is somewhat of a Frankenstein's monster resembling Superman 2. Ron Howard reshot a considerable amount of footage, but not all of it. I don't know what survived from the original shoot, and because Howard kept the crew that Lord and Miller hired, including the superb cinematographer Bradford Young, it's so lukewarm and box-checky that I don't actually care to try and piece it all together. And somehow, even though the movie's shoot was extended, the release date was pushed up from Christmas 2018 to summer 2018, before the rancorous debate, no pun intended, over The Last Jedi had truly dissipated. It speaks volumes about a film when it contains my favorite character in the history of film, Han Solo, as well as my favorite friendship, Han and Chewbacca, the most well-adjusted platonic soulmates in all of fiction, and I still walked out with one overriding thought. Well, that was definitely a movie. Things sure did happen. Boy, that had a beginning and a middle and an end, kinda. It lives up to its title, A Story About Star Wars. I'm not even mad. I just don't care. I don't know how I feel about the revelation that Chewie eats people, and I hate that the great Tandy Newton got fridged after two scenes and had to do press because she was fucking fifth billed, but as I sat in that theater, mostly dispassionately, a little grumbly, moderately entertained, if thoroughly unchallenged, for 135 minutes. It was the first signal that I might be moving past this whole franchise, before the dam completely broke. Like Solo, Episode 9 of the Skywalker Saga, a dubious title considering the utter lack of Skywalkers in these three movies, went through a change in directors. The patronizing, repetitive Colin Trevorrow, no stranger to making someone else's movies over again with Jurassic World, either left the project or was escorted off of it before shooting, coinciding with a Boba Fett standalone that was shuttered after the self-destructive director of The Last Fantastic Four, Josh Trank, got shit-canned. Instead of postponing the Christmas 2019 release date, Lucasfilm pushed ahead and wrangled J.J. Abrams back to the series. Yes, the guy who has famously concurred with the overriding sentiment that he's terrible at endings, evidenced by almost every show he's ever created, was brought back to stick the landing. Hopefully, for the first time. Did it work? Nope.
What we've done all this time.
What are you doing there, 3PO?
Taking one last look, sir, at my friends.
Confronting fear. It's the destiny of a Jedi. Your destiny.
We're all in this.
Till the end. Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Tickets available now.
Let's talk about hitting Control Z, the undo button. Something that The Last Jedi was erroneously accused of because J.J. Abrams does it a shit ton in The Rise of Skywalker. Rose Tico, a character that Rian Johnson created, played by Kelly Marie Tran, was bullied off of Twitter because of derogatory racist remarks and misogyny, and returned for this film with 88% less screen time. Co-writer Chris Terrio insisted that she wasn't sidelined, but that they wanted to pair her with Leia, who conveniently had less screen time. This excuse is exposed as bullshit when you learn that Carrie Fisher died not only before the movie was shot, but before the movie was written, and appears briefly through manipulated archive footage. The definitive answer that Kylo Ren gave Rey regarding her parents, retconned into Rey being Emperor Palpatine's granddaughter, but also his clone's daughter, question mark? Chris Terrio explained this by saying that the trilogy was always a story about Skywalkers and Palpatines, which was definitely not the case. Sidebar. This detail also includes a silent cameo from the best actor working on television today, Jodie Comer, the star of Killing Eve. And that might be the most infuriating part. End sidebar. The potential romance of Finn and Rose chopped off at the knees, replaced with another character, Janna, another black ex-stormtrooper. Why? Because of the interracial aspect? No idea. Because Janna doesn't really do anything and is pretty shoehorned in. Kylo Ren, back in the helmet that he destroyed in the previous film. Why? Also unexplained, but a logical answer concerns Disney's Disneyland expansion, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, and its centerpiece canon attraction, Rise of the Resistance, for which Adam Driver probably didn't want an animatronic with his face on it. Show a scene of him having the helmet reconstructed, slap it on, bingo bango, done. C-3PO has a tender, sentimental moment before having his mind wiped permanently, and an hour and a half later, R2-D2 plugs in his backup memory. Good as new. Have I made my point yet? To add insult to injury, this is possibly the most incoherent film in the history of Star Wars. A muddled mishmash of disparate storylines with murky or negligible payoffs assembled without grace or purpose. Allow me to try and describe the plot. Hey, let's go to this planet. Now let's go to that planet. That thingamabob tells me to go over here. Bad guy speech, choppy action set piece, noise, 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 wistful looks at spaceships, pointless fan service, victory montage, credits. Will this happy ending stick? Well, the last one didn't. I guess it all depends on what financial model Disney's working through in 38 years. There are still some questions, like how did all those fully staffed Star Destroyers get underground? What the fuck is a Wayfinder and why does it look like a holocron? Why does Palpatine look like Roger Ebert now? Is Adam Driver bummed that this came out the same year as Marriage Story and all anyone wants to ask him are Star Wars questions? I don't need answers. I don't think there are any sufficient ones. There was one moment I felt genuinely invested in the storytelling, when Chewbacca's transport is seemingly blown to hell and they walked back his death literally 5 minutes later. Oh, and then he gets a medal at the very end, a moment that I liked a lot more when it was given to him by Carrie Fisher at the 1997 MTV Movie Awards. Not a joke, that happened, and it was one of the greatest moments of my life. Billy Dee Williams returns for the first time in 36 years, and he's in literally three scenes. Wedge Antilles comes back, and it's for literally one shot. Kerry Russell and Richard E. Grant are utterly wasted. Unacceptable. I can't even with this shit anymore. I'm used to Star Wars making me upset, or furious, or offended. I'm not used to Star Wars boring the ever-loving shit out of me. Did it happen? Did I finally outgrow the saga from a long, long time ago, far, far away? if my reaction to most of the television series that debuted at the same time, The Mandalorian, is to be believed, yes. Yes, I have. I've always been proud of being a Star Wars fan, and I have defended it time and time again, even when I have no logical reason to, other than maybe a twisted sense of brand loyalty, but for the first time in my life, I'm taking the franchise as it comes on a case-by-case basis. If they put out another show, maybe I'll get around to it eventually, try the pilot on for size, see how it goes. If they make another movie, maybe I'll wait for it to hit Disney+. If there's merch to buy, I'm already over it. Maybe someday, when there isn't a global fucking pandemic going on, I'll visit one of the many theme park attractions. Who knows for sure? Not me, that's who. And I'm kinda okay with that. Will I ever revisit the movies I enjoyed? Probably. Someday. Someone. Or not. It is on that uncertain note that we conclude this episode of the Bonus Chronicles. Thank you for keeping this little cottage industry alive through your patronage. Next Friday, we're taking the fight to RefTrax and diving deep into a frequent target of their wrath, the fundamentally misunderstood and utterly brilliant Paul Verhoeven film, Starship Troopers.
Would you like to know more?
Until then, take care. Thank you for being a subscriber.
Darn, that's the end.